Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
But Chicago was a turning point for King. His movement was aging, its actions drawing greater skepticism, and its successes leaving him with fewer obvious dragons to slay. It was a campaign looking for a cause. The inroads into Southern segregation gave King a greater awareness of the unresolved tensions in the North in the wake of the Great Migration. "Negroes have continued to flee from behind the cotton curtain," King told a crowd at Buckingham Fountain near the Loop, testing out a new theme in virgin territory. "But now they find that after years of indifference and exploitation, Chicago has not turned out to be the new Jerusalem." Yet the very thing that made black life hard in the North, the very nature of Northern hostility, unwritten, mercurial, opaque, and eminently deniable, made it hard for King to nail down an obvious right versus wrong cause to protest. Blacks in the North could already vote and sit at a lunch counter or anywhere they wanted on an elevated train. Yet they were hemmed in and isolated into two overcrowded sections of the city, the South Side and the West Side, restricted in the jobs they could hold and the mortgages they could get, their children attending segregated and inferior schools, not by edict as in the South, but by circumstance in the North, with the results pretty much the same. The unequal living conditions produced the expected unequal results. Blacks working long hours for overpriced flats, their children left unsupervised and open to gangs, the resulting rise in crime and drugs, with few people able to get out, and the problem so complex as to make it impossible to identify a single cause or solution. King was running headlong into what the sociologist Gunnar Myrdal called the Northern Paradox. "In the North," Myrdal wrote, "almost everybody is against discrimination in general. But at the same time, almost everybody practices discrimination in his own personal affairs. That is, by not allowing blacks into unions or clubhouses, certain jobs and white neighborhoods, indeed, avoiding social interaction overall. It is the culmination of all these personal discriminations," he continued, "which creates the color bar in the North, and for the Negro, causes unusually severe unemployment, crowded housing conditions, crime, and vice. About this social process, the ordinary white Northerner keeps sublimely ignorant and unconcerned." Thus, any civil rights campaign in the North would not be an attack on outrageous laws that, with enough grit and fortitude, could be overturned with the stroke of a pen. Instead, King would be fighting the ill-defined fear and antipathy that made Northern whites flee at the sight of a black neighbor, turn away blacks at realty offices, or not hire them if they chose. The enemy was a feeling, a general unease that led to the flight of white people and businesses, and sucked the resources out of the ghettos the migrants were quarantined into. No laws could make frightened white Northerners care about blacks enough to permit them full access to the system they dominated. "So long as this city is dominated by whites, whether because of their numbers, without force, or by their force if they were in the minority. The Chicago Tribune once wrote, "There will be limitations placed on the black people." Still, despite the odds, King was compelled to go north, was called to it, he said, as had a good portion of his people in the still-unfolding migration. He had made the journey himself when he went to Boston University for graduate school, and while there met his wife, Coretta, another Southerner. King's campaign in the North was, in one sense, simply reacting to a major shift in the epicenter of black America, the historian James R. Ralph wrote. It was following the great demographic flow of black Americans from the rural South to the urban North. King actually moved into an apartment in the most hard-scrabble section of town, the West Side neighborhood of North Lawndale, where the poorest and most recent arrivals from the South had shakily established themselves. He had a chess-like series of encounters with Mayor Richard J. Daley, the mayor boss of Chicago, who managed to outwit the civil rights leader at nearly every turn. For one thing, Daley knew not to make the same mistakes as his Southern counterparts. He met with King, appearing cooperative rather than ignoring him or having him thrown into jail. He vowed to protect the marchers with a heavy police presence that sometimes outnumbered the marchers. It worked so well that the protesters rarely had the chance to contrast their peaceable courage against foaming-at-the-mouth supremacists, because Daley's police force didn't let any white mob get near them, which kept the protests off the news and kept the movement from gaining traction, just as Daley had hoped. That is, until after months of build-up, King went to march against housing segregation in a neighborhood called Marquette Park on the city's southwest side. This was a working-class neighborhood of Poles, Lithuanians, Germans, and Italians who had not long since gotten their starter bungalows and were standing their ground against the very thought of colored people moving in. It was August 5th, 1966. A fist-shaking crowd of some 4,000 residents had gathered in advance. Upon his arrival, they cursed King with epithets from a knoll overlooking the march. Many people in the crowd waved Confederate flags. Some wore Nazi-like helmets. One placard read, "King would look good with a knife in his back." The march had barely begun when a heckler hurled a rock as big as a fist at King, striking him in the head, just above the right ear. He fell to his knees, and as he tried to get up, the crowd pelted the demonstrators with bottles, eggs, firecrackers, and more rocks. Some in the crowd turned and smashed rocks into cars and buses that passed with colored people in them. Some 1,200 police officers and 200 plainclothesmen had gathered in anticipation of trouble, but this was one of the rare occasions that they were outnumbered by white residents primed for confrontation. As the 800 King supporters tried to carry on the march, they passed men, women, and children on their front stoops, who called the marchers cannibals, savages, and worse. A column of 300 jeering white teenagers sat in the middle of the street to block the marchers' path. The police dispersed the youths with nightsticks waving, and the march was able to resume. But the teenagers repositioned themselves half a block down and sat in the street again. It took a second charge from the police to break up the young hecklers. When the march wound down, the mob chased the buses carrying King's people away. Rising in agitation that lasted for hours, the mob smashed an effigy of King, overturned a car on Marquette Road, stoned other cars, and fought police trying to clear the place out, requiring reinforcements to beat the mob back with clubs and shots fired into the air. In the end, some 30 people were injured and 40 were arrested. Some of King's aides had warned him not to go to Chicago. He said he had to. "I have to do this," he said as he tried to steady himself after the stoning, "to expose myself, to bring this hate into the open." He had marched in the deepest corners of Alabama, but was unprepared for what he was in for in Chicago. "I have seen many demonstrations in the South," he said that violent day in the Promised Land, "but I have never seen anything so hostile and so hateful as I've seen here today." Ida Mae watched it on the news that night and worried for the man she so badly had wanted to see. She expected this in Mississippi, not in the North. "No," she would say decades afterward. "Some places I just trusted more than others."
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Monday, January 16th, 2017. So I have been told. Also, as I have been told, today is the holiday for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I know there were services. People didn't have to go to school, unfortunately, or some people even got a day away from the plantation as a result of the counter-racist actions of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I could not begin the program without making sure we did have an acknowledgement of that. The excerpt that you just heard was from one of Gus's top five books all time, Isabel Wilkerson, The Warmth of Other Suns. I think it took us about 4 months. It's not the shortest book, but it is brilliant. Top five selection. We spent about 4 months reading that text in our reading club back in, was that 2000? I think that was 2013, but brilliant. She in that whole section where she talks about, and it's directly connected to housing. I could have picked, she has about 3, 4, 5, probably even more than that, different sections that just give so much detail, explicit detail about the deliberate terrorism, economic terrorism that whites targeted on black people to keep them from housing. And I mean widespread. This was in Chicago, Illinois, in L.A., in New York, just all over, just charging them exorbitant fees for housing, not allowing them to have housing at all, putting them in the worst possible housing and charging them like four times what the house is worth. Just really incredible information. And I thought that directly ties into what we're talking about today. And that's the whole reason, or that's one of the main things that Dr. King was protesting against in Chicago when he was met with all of the racist terrorism from, reminded me of someone I hear often, from white women, white men, and white children. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Broadcast, but oh, and make sure I get in. We did start, we were a couple minutes late starting. There was tech issues. I was trying to call our guest and have her on my line for the broadcast, and it was not connecting us for whatever reason. When I would dial her line, it would bump me off of the program line. That happened repeatedly. I didn't do anything special or odd or different, just it finally allowed me to get everybody on the same conference line so that we could proceed with the program. Anything like that that happens that's just odd, bizarre, unusual, and there's no real explanation for it, I generally, that's the sort of thing I just say, suspect the usual suspects, whites. Now, for the program today, I was contacted last week. Housing, real important issue under the system of racism, white supremacy. They have lots of curious phrases. I think housing insecurity is one of them that they will use to talk about this problem. Mr. Fuller, I have an audio clip. We'll play it towards the end of the broadcast where he's talked about racial dislocation. They have lots of little cute phrases that they'll put together, gentrification, basically talking about we're going to make sure that black people do not have a quality spot to rest their head. And if they do have that spot, then we're going to do everything we can to undermine it, poison their water, claim we have to build a highway, just abuse and harass them so that they cannot be comfortable. I think Mr. Fuller, his catchphrase, keep those squatters on the move. That's the whole design of the system of racism, white supremacy. We had a listener in the North Carolina area. She contacted me last week and she was having her own issues with racism, white supremacy with regards to her housing. I thought it would be constructive to have her share exactly what she has experienced, how being informed about racism, white supremacy has helped her deal with this situation, if at all. And then just strategies, things that we should kind of keep in mind, and also an opportunity for people if they people have suggestions. I know we have listeners in the North Carolina area. People have suggestions, things that might be helpful. That would be great as well. So definitely don't be bashful for the program. Without further ado, our guest joining us from North Carolina. Are you with us, ma'am?
Yes. Hi, guests. Hi, listeners.
greetings. Thank you so much for having us, or thank you for sharing some of your Monday evening to visit with us on the program. And thank you for being patient with the tech issues we were having at the beginning. How do you want to be referenced for the program? What would you like for us to call you?
You can just call me Mia.
We will go with Mia. Anything that you think listeners should know about you before we get into what you've been experiencing?
Well, just that I'm just a normal, regular person. I'm trying to live my life and take care of my daughter. I recently became a mother last year, and that's just pretty much it. I'm just trying to live my life.
Right on. You're in the Greensboro, North Carolina area?
Yes.
Right on. Okay. And you are a black female, black mother?
Yes.
Right on. This program, Context of White Supremacy, I use the term racism and the term white supremacy. I use them as synonyms, and I use the same definition for both terms. The definition I use is as follows: a global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists, and do you think that definition is accurate?
Most definitely accurate, from my experience.
Right on. We shall proceed. I guess before we get to your housing situation, I know you said that you, when we talked last week, you said that you had you've heard of Mr. Fuller's work, you had been studying his research with regards to counter-racism, and that you heard some of the Cows broadcasts as well. I guess at what point did you begin to learn, like, scientifically about racism, counter-racism? How long have you been studying?
I would say for maybe about 5 years.
Wow, okay.
I'll say for me, I just started feeling, you know, strange about the behavior that I was receiving from white people. And I just became conscious because of that. And I didn't have an accurate understanding of racism, white supremacy, but I just had vibes, and, you know, it's just their behavior started making me feel uncomfortable. And it wasn't until I listened to your show, I think it was back in 2012, when I listened to your show, that's when I started getting an accurate understanding of what I was dealing with and why I was feeling the way I was feeling. So I'll probably say about 5 years. I don't know if that was 5 years. It seems like it. Yeah. That's when I started really, like, trying to study about it and trying to get an accurate understanding of what I was dealing with.
Wow. Before the housing situation came up, like, can you think of any ways that as you began to study racism more accurately and take this seriously, like, things that changed in your behavior?
In my behavior?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, you want me to tell you what I've been doing, like, since I've been studying white supremacy?
Just if you can think of any ways that your behavior has changed, if there's any things that you have stopped doing since you've been studying, or any things that you've started doing since you've become less confused about racism, if that's the case. If not, that's fine, too.
Most definitely. So I would say that I started to withdraw from white people because I had a lot of friends and associates who were white growing up. And as I studied more about racism, white supremacy, I stopped, you know, socializing with them as much as I was. And I also started analyzing their behavior when I was here. You know, white people around me in general. From watching, listening to the broadcast, you know, I started keeping records. Like, anytime I'm involved with white people, where I'm signing any kind of contract or working with them, you know, and I know that they could potentially use something against me or stop me from making money or any situation like that, I started documenting everything that, you know, transpired between me and the white person. So those are a few things that I definitely started doing after listening to the show.
documentation that is going to come up later on that we really talk about that a lot on workplace racism, but just in general, under the system, documentation can be a very, very constructive, useful thing. Your family members that you're around in North Carolina, friends even, how did they respond when you started studying racism? Did you try to talk about it with them? Were they encouraging, like, right on, yeah, we need to talk about this racism thing?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There were a lot of arguments that happened, and I understand, so I just stopped arguing with them about it, and I just let, like, whenever, because now when things happen to them, they make me understand, or they try to tell me, like, you know, this happened or whatever. So it kind of indicates to me that they do see a problem, and they're starting to gradually, you know, understand what I was trying to tell them about, you know, racist white people. So, but I don't force it on them like I used to, because I tried to force it on them. And I realized that didn't work. And where they're arguing and trying to, you know, tell, you know, their peers or whoever about racism, and it backfired and that kind of thing. So I realized that I need to just, you know, let it play out, because they're going to see me to keep, you know, reiterating things.
Wow. Wow. You all are in North Carolina. I mean, that area, there have been a lot of cases that got, like, significant national attention with regards to racism. They had the shooting of Jonathan Farrell back in 2013, and then the trial that happened subsequently where the officer, Randall Carrick, he was not convicted, where I think they had a hung jury and they decided not to retry him. They had the shooting with Keith Lamont Scott just a few months back that got a lot of attention. And, of course, the officer was not indicted. They didn't even get to a trial in that situation. Like, has that changed anything to make it easier to talk about racism with your family, friends?
No, because I get the whole, you know, there's a few things, but all of them are, you know, and that I get that kind of pushback. So, no, not really. It didn't help.
Wow. Right on. So all of that, in my opinion, very important. I think a lot of people worldwide can recognize many patterns within that, which just tells you the magnitude of the problem we are facing. With your housing situation, if you can kind of set us up with the details about when you moved in and what you encountered. This is after you've been, or I guess you'll tell us when you give us the details. Just so when you moved in and what the situation was like when you first moved into your new residence.
Yes, I moved in August of 2015. At the time I was pregnant. I think I was like probably like 7 or 6 months pregnant. I moved in, and I noted that the carpet had discoloration on it. So the carpet was discolored. The bathroom, in my bathroom, it had discoloration in the tub. The side of my refrigerator was damaged. And that was pretty much, oh, also I had mold in my, I had some kind of mildew in my cabinet drawer. And I told them about that as well.
And was there, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was waiting for you to respond.
Okay. So you noted all of these different problems, the mold problem, the mildew, discoloration in the bathroom area and with the carpeting. Did they like acknowledge that, yes, all of these were issues before you were a resident here? And did they also acknowledge that we will take care of all of these problems?
No. They acknowledged certain problems, but they dismissed it to me and said, well, such and such approved the apartment, so that's that. I also was told by management that it was my responsibility moving in to clean out the patio. The patio was filthy. It had cobwebs everywhere. It was dirty. It had pencil marks all over the walls. It was clear to me that whoever was living in here before were pissed off because they just threw all over the walls. And they wasn't trying to clean it up. They told me while I was pregnant that I was going to have to go out there and thoroughly clean that patio because it was my responsibility. The only thing they did fix was the mold under my cabinet. Everything else that I had an issue with, they said, whatever, you know, they approved it, so it's not that big of a deal. They wasn't trying to fix any of the other problems.
Wow. That is tremendous respect shown for a pregnant black female, number one. And just, wow, the health concerns that can come with some of these issues, if it's a mildew or mold issue, and then we're not even going to, you know, tidy the area. You know, you can get out there and clean it yourself. And you said, was there any condition that they said, oh, yeah, we'll fix this? Or did they just say, forget it, the apartment was...
The mold under my closet, under my cabinet was the only thing they said they was going to fix. And they did fix that. Everything else, they left it as is.
Wow. So you bring these issues. They say they're not going to fix anything. Do they tell you this in writing, or is this a verbal, just we're not going to?
They just dismissed it. Like, okay, it was approved. Because when I mentioned the carpet and stuff, the property manager said, well, they approved it. So that's that. You know, I don't try to be combative with, you know, because I want to definitely note this. Me and my mom, because my mom came to the property with me to look at it, and she was here when she made the statement that I should clean it off, which was ridiculous. But anyway, she was here and made that comment. So I talked to management and told them, like, you know, I don't think I should be cleaning that off and all of this kind of stuff. She was very dismissive of the whole thing, you know, and I wasn't trying to be combative with her. I didn't want to, because I could sense that I was going to have a problem with them. So I was trying to be as nice and respectful as possible and not, you know, try to engage in an argument, because I knew it was going to be an argument if I tried to challenge her.
Mm.
So, you know, when she said that it was approved, I said, okay, well, I mean, as long as you don't bring it back up to me, which is what they did, you know, they tried to bring it back up to me.
Wow.
So that's when it became a problem.
Mm-hmm. All of the people that were making decisions, basically saying that we're not going to clean the apartment, or we're not going to fix these damages, or what have you, the apartment was approved. Were these white people or non-white people?
White people.
White people. Okay. White women. Wow. Okay. Did you at any point feel like, hey, if I do try to contest this and say, hey, this is incorrect, that they might just say, well, you know what, we're just not going to give you the apartment. How about that? We'll find someone else to rent here.
No. I'm sorry. Can you restate that? Because I don't know if I catch exactly what you said.
For sure. Did you ever feel at any point either threatened or intimidated that if I try to challenge these white women about this apartment, that they just might say, hey, we're not even going to rent to you. We'll find someone else that can, you know, stay here.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
That's a similar situation that I think a lot of black people worldwide in a variety of situations on the job, in the hospital, with enforcement officers, that is a consistent position, that power dynamic in terms of the power that whites have versus victims of racism, where, man, sometimes it's, hey, I'm going to just try to do the best I can to see if I can get through this situation, not upset these racists, and get whatever resources I'm trying to get, and try to have as few problems as possible. That is the system of white supremacy, white in your face. I guess also, do you think it was a factor? Was this affordable housing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you think that was a factor in them kind of having an attitude like, hey, we're helping you all out in the first place, so you should be happy with whatever you get?
Oh, most definitely, yes. And I know a couple of other people who receive or they have apartments with affordable housing, and they feel exactly the same way. So they said, they feel like they feel like management is making them feel like they owe them something. Like, this is, like, I'm living in luxury, basically. You should be happy that you have somewhere to live. That's exactly how they are treating me. That's exactly how I feel.
Wow. Were they like forthcoming with all the information that you need to know so that you can be a really well-informed renter, so that you know about your lease in detail, you know about your rights with affordable housing? Did they make all that information available to you from the very beginning?
Yes, basically, they gave me like a 13,000-page lease. It had all kinds of information on it. So there was a lot of requirements for me to do. But when it came to them, you know, being responsible for their part of the lease, that's when everything became a problem. But I had a lot of information. Yes, they gave me a lot of paperwork telling me what I can and can't do. You know, it felt like they were like, basically, if you live here, you're going to be terrorized. So know that like a parent or something, like a parent telling you that if you get this phone or if you get this car, all of the things that they're going to take away from you or something, that's how I felt when they were giving me my lease.
Mr. Fuller talks about that's we do not qualify as men and women, racist man, racist woman. They function as the parents on the planet, and non-white people, we function as the children. That's what the system of white supremacy dictates. I thought that was also important as well, where you said that they had a lot of rules, basically, since they're the parents and they make the rules. They have a lot of rules about what you can do, what you can't do, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. Did you say they did not have as much information about what they are obligated to do and things that they're supposed to do?
Yeah, there were things in the lease that they told me they were responsible for, but at this current moment, they're basically saying that they don't have to do nothing that they said in the lease at all. They'll do what they want. If they request for you to do something, you should comply or have a problem.
Wow. Make it explicit, context of white supremacy. I guess at what point, and you said, when did you move in again? Was it last year?
It was 2015.
Okay, so
it was in
year and a half or so?
Yeah, right.
Okay. When did things
begin? Well, almost. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess at what point did things begin to become a problem where, you know, they're coming to you and saying that things are wrong with the apartment?
Well, the issues in the apartment, I had moisture issues in the apartment. The temperature is always, you know, strange, like in different rooms. I had a problem with molding in my closet. I had mold on my walls in my closet. Basically the moisture issues were the biggest problem that I had. And that was like, I was feeling the issues with the temperatures when I moved in. Like that summer that I moved in, I was feeling these temperature problems. So, yeah, that definitely was a beginning start of problems. In regard to management, when I started having a problem with them, it was basically 7 months after I moved in, she asked me to get a professional carpet clean. And I declined. I respectfully declined. And after that, she let it go, you know. They weren't trying to fix the issues that I talked about in relation to the moisture issues. They weren't trying to fix that. But when she required for me to get a professional carpet clean, and I declined, and then she waited months and months later. Then in this past December, she brought it up again. And basically I received a notice that stated that I could potentially be terminated if I didn't get my carpet cleaned. Also, she said on that notice that I should clean the tub, too. So, but the tub wasn't dirty. It just had discoloration on it, which I noted. She knew that it had discoloration on it, but she demanded that I clean it. But it was clean. So she had two things on there on the notice, because they do annual inspections. I wanted to make that clear, that they do inspections like every couple of months. They come in and do an inspection of the unit. So she basically made a problem during that inspection. She made a problem out of really ridiculous things, because she made a problem out of me. She said, I need to dust the ceiling fan. And it was just really ridiculous things that she was demanding. It was like she made a problem out of it. She basically said that she was going to, this is management that I'm talking about. She basically said that she was going to come back and that I could potentially be terminated if she comes back and things are not clean to her satisfaction.
Approximately what age is this white woman that's doing this inspecting?
I want to say she's about 40 something.
Okay. Do you think any of her, like, are you the primary person that she has contact with when she comes to the residence to do, you know, these inspections and such? Is it primarily you she's talking
yes.
to? Okay.
Yes.
Do you think there's any sort of hostility between her, since she's it seems like she's probably a little bit older than you, between and you as a black female and then a black female, a black mom? Do you think that caused her any special racist angst towards you?
I definitely think so, because she was being very condescending. Like, you would think that, you know, somebody's job is to do inspections or whatever the issue is, that they would just come in and do it and, you know, just try to get out of it, you know, out of the situation as soon as possible so they can do their real work. But she would come in and wipe her hands on things and look at her fingers and, oh, girl, you know, that's the kind of thing, you know, attitude that I was dealing with. Like, oh, you can do much better than this. Like, and I'm like thinking, I mean, I would love to come to your house to see what your house looks like. You know, when she would do that, I would think that, but I wouldn't say anything. But yeah, she was definitely trying to be condescending a lot when she would come in. Also, you know, I have a daughter, so she would, you know, always, you know, say something about my daughter and, oh, you know, she was just being really just over, you know, extra with her attitude and personality, you know, trying to enforce, oh, your daughter's so cute, oh my God, you know. But meanwhile, she's trying to be condescending about my cleaning habits, though. You see, like, being passive aggressive.
Right, right. Wow. That, what you just described, like, I mean, it's generations of black families that have had to tolerate that. White, and particularly white women. Matter of fact, we read Minister Malcolm X's autobiography, and he talked about the exact same thing. White women, under the guise of saying that they are social workers, coming in and expecting this and telling you how to run your house and how to raise your children and, oh, you're not very clean, you need to do. I mean, that is about the last 100 years of black family life in the United States under white supremacy is right there. And specifically, I would say, I mean, that is overwhelmingly a role that has been white women, almost exclusively white women, who are always, almost always left out of conversations about racism, white supremacy. So she comes in and she said, okay, you gotta clean the bathtub area and you gotta get this carpet professionally clean. Did you point out that, you know, well, wait a minute, this is not in my lease, which you're, you know, asking me to do. This is not, you know, in my lease anywhere.
Yeah, and what she would do is, because she's not the property manager, she's the assistant to the manager. So what she would do is, she would say, talk to whoever, you know, I don't want to say her name, but she would cut me off in mid-sentence and say, talk to her, because I don't have nothing to do with it, you know. So I just didn't talk to her. I was like, you know, why? I don't need to talk to her unless she comes down and requests for me to do it herself. But, you know, I just let it go. But this particular time in December, when she sent me a notice saying that they were going to come back, and if I didn't do what they wanted me to do and clean the way they wanted me to clean, that they could potentially terminate my lease. That's when I made a problem out of it, and I called the operations director, who is, and I want to make this clear too, because I want to talk to the manager, because she had already I had an incident with her. Where I was in her office, I think I was signing something, and she accused me of throwing dirty diapers behind my unit, and she yelled at me and said, you need to tell whoever's throwing those dirty diapers in the back of your unit to stop throwing those dirty diapers back there. And I was like, I said, ma'am, I don't mean no harm. I don't know what you're talking about, but I hope that you have this conversation with every single person who lives in my unit, because there are other people with children that live in my unit. And then she tried to calm down, and I was like, at that point, I was like, I don't want to talk to her about nothing at this point. Here on out, I'm not going to talk to her unless I'm confronted, because she was yelling at me, and she clearly had a problem. So, you know, I wasn't even trying to talk to her. So when I had the issue with the carpet, I tried to go right ahead of her to her boss. So I asked her, you know, why am I being asked to do this? This is not a part of my lease. But the other lady who I talked to, now this was, I think she's biracial. She's not white. But I talked to her over the phone, and she was about the situation with my carpet, and she was being very, like, dismissive, like, honey, just clean it up. You know, I was getting that kind of attitude, like, just do it. And I was like, well, ma'am, I've noted to them that my carpet is discolored. There's nothing I can do to it to make it look better. It's just discolored. There's nothing I can do. And she was like, well, let me come over the next day. So she came over, and she was being very condescending and acting like, oh, honey, just, you know, whatever, just clean it up. Yeah, I got spots on my carpet, too. Just do this, that, and the third. Call the carpet cleaning person and get an estimate on it. And, you know, so I called I called the coalition, too, the next day, because I was having the moisture issues and the mold and all that stuff. So I called the coalition the next day. And then I got the estimate on the carpet, and the carpet man pretty much trashed these apartments. He was basically like, you know what? These people want to use cheap carpet. They don't want to pay for nothing. The carpet is just raggedy. I can clean it, but it's not really much I could do to it. You know, and I recorded the whole conversation. But when I had the meeting, the meeting, that's when she tried to dismiss all of that. You know, the carpet cleaning man, actually, because they use the carpet cleaning company that I called, they use them on the regular basis, but she didn't want to hear what he had to say about the carpet.
Wow. She just wanted you to pay to get it professionally cleaned, even though you had pointed out that there was a problem with the carpet being discolored when you initially moved into the property.
Right.
Wow.
And oh, you can go ahead.
Oh, unless you had, did you have more that you wanted to get in?
Yeah, because, I mean, the next week when she came back, especially they came back to look at the tub and the carpet, mm-hmm. and I kept having a feeling, like, during all of this time, I just kept having a feeling that they were going to try to terminate my lease, which is why I kept taking it seriously, because mm-hmm. I was like, this seems like they're trying to build something up to, you know, cause a problem. So the next time that she came in, the operations director and the assistant manager, the next time they came in, I had my mom here to witness everything, you know? So basically when she walked in, because I had tried to clean the carpet myself without paying for a professional carpet clean. So my mom came in. I mean, my mom was here. The operations director came in and looked at the carpet and said, oh, it looks better. And then she said, did you get it cleaned? And I said, no, I cleaned it. And she said, well, I need you to get it professionally cleaned. So I'm like, so this is not about it with the way it looks at this point. Y'all just want me to pay for whatever ridiculous reason. So it was clear that they was just trying to create a problem, because how are you going to come in somebody's apartment and say, oh, the carpet looks nice, and then make a problem out of it because I didn't get it professionally cleaned? That's ridiculous. So they basically made a problem out of it again. Like the next time when they came after that day, the next week, a couple of weeks when they came, they made a problem out of both of those things again. Even though it was clear that the carpet was clean, it was clear that the carpet was clean, they still wanted me to pay and re-clean the tub even though it wasn't dirty.
I'm so much reminded, even though this is not necessarily workplace racism, but it's white supremacy nonetheless. The book we read at the beginning of 2016, Edward Baptist, The Half Has Never Been Told. And he had the section where he described in detail that if you black people would be enslaved black people, they'd be out and they pick, you know, let's say you pick 50 bales of cotton today. It's Monday. And so, okay, you got your 50. You come in on Tuesday and you pick 50 bales of cotton. So, oh, that's going to be a beating. You should have had 51. And they just move it around arbitrarily wherever they want it to be. Like, oh, first this was fine and now this is not fine. Not that you did a bad job or not that you messed up anything, but just, hey, this is what it means to be white. This is what racism is all about. We just make up reasons to make life difficult and to terrorize black people. So we come in and it's not even necessarily about that the carpet is dirty or that you even were the one to mess it up. But just, oh, we want you to spend this money. And I was even thinking this could be some sort of a racket between the white property managers and the people at this housing and this carpet company. Well, we'll get you some business. And I mean, whites, they are so devious. They lie so much. They're so conniving and they work together. That certainly came to mind. I see we had Mr. Scotty Reed. He's in the North Carolina area. Definitely was hopeful that he, you know, if he had any suggestions or recommendations, I wanted to hear from him as well as Thomas in New York. Just I wanted before we get to them, I wanted you to share as this has escalated and they've, you know, been insistent and even more threatening. You said that you were kind of getting the feeling that they were going to make this an issue and maybe even try and terminate your lease so they could throw you all out. As they made this more of an issue, you requested a meeting and you had your mother present. Can you describe what happened?
So, yes, I wrote letters to management and the operations director about the issue. And I stated in the letter that I had a disability and, you know, this is going to put a, you know, it's going to cause an issue with my finances. So she told me to request for a reasonable accommodation for whatever issue I was having. So I asked for a reasonable accommodation and I was declined like a few days later. Like, I don't even feel like they even tried to, you know, figure nothing out. They just was like, no, you're going to pay. So the executive, the assistant executive director sent me a letter saying, very condescending and disrespectful, just, oh, we gave you time to do this. We're not giving you any more time. You can't get a reasonable accommodation because we don't do financial accommodations. So, you know, whatever, you know, with just a condescending attitude, trying to enforce authority. So she said that I could request for a meeting to discuss my reasonable accommodation being denied. So I scheduled a meeting with her, and this was on January the 5th. So we came in the room, in the meeting room at Affordable Housing Headquarters, and my mom was there, and I was there, and then the operations director and the assistant manager and the manager all was there with the executive director. Okay. So everyone was polite to each other and respectful, you know, but then when she came in, I mean, she was just ridiculous. She came in with an attitude. She asked me to state why I was here and what my issues were. I told her what my issues were. Mid-sentence, she kept cutting me off with the attitude. And she was being very like, you know, asking the assistant manager and the manager, did you say that? Because every time I would say that I told them about an issue, they'll say, she'll say, did you write it down? Did you do this, that, and the third? And I was thinking, like, why would I write something? I mean, I told y'all all the issues I had in the beginning, and I complained about the temperature issues when I was living in the unit. It became a problem. So why would I have any documentation when that's their job? I can write down whatever. I can write down whatever I want to today and pass it off like I wrote it before. So what does my documentation, what is that going to do? If I told management something and they didn't care and they didn't write it down because they just dismissed it saying, oh, well, you keep the windows open or there's some, or you don't turn the bathroom fan on when you get out the tub or try to make some kind of ridiculous, you know, reason why I'm having a problem, how can I prove that I said anything? So basically what management did, they just sat there and lied. So she kept asking them, did she say that? And they kept saying no, you know, so it was that kind of thing. And she kept cutting me off. My mom was trying to speak. She told my mom to stop talking loud, like was yelling at her to stop talking. Stop cutting me off. You better stop talking now. That's the kind of thing, you know, kind of demands that she was giving my mom. So towards the end of the meeting, I was like, I was in the middle of talking and she was like, could you calm your voice down? And I was like, ma'am, I don't need you to tell me to calm my voice down. I'm not even being loud. I'm just, because I'm in the middle of a sentence. You know, she kept being real, you know, demanding when somebody was saying something and she felt like they were talking over her or whatever. And trust me, and I want this to be completely understood. Nobody was talking over this lady. Nobody was being disrespectful towards this lady. She just wanted a problem, and she was doing a lot of twitching. I mean, it was just ridiculous. She was twitching, you know, her eyes. She was looking at us all strange and crazy. Like, you know, it was just ridiculous. I can't even really explain it because she was just acting so erratic, you know. So when I told her, she had told me to stop talking to her or lower my voice or something. I said, ma'am, my voice is not loud. This lady got up out of her chair, like, and banged her hand on the desk. And said, get out. And I got up. And I was like, okay. You know, I got up. Me and my mom was left out of there. And I made a comment to my mom that, you know, I was like, mom, I think she's being racist. I think we should get a lawyer because this is ridiculous. This kind of treatment is just out of control. And my mom stayed back to talk to the operations director. And I went outside because I was like, no, I'm not going to, you know, this lady might hit me, so let me just leave because she's acting crazy, so let me go. So my mom stayed back to talk to the operations director, and the the assistant director, she told my mom that she was going to terminate my lease. So the next day, I got a lease termination notice saying that they were terminating my lease because of prior harassing behavior and harassing behavior at the meeting. That's what it said on the lease termination that I got.
Wow. Just the seriousness of all this, because this sort of thing happens every day in terms of Black people being tossed out of an, and I mean in a myriad of ways. We talked about that with NDB Connolly in his book, A World More Concrete. We talked about it a few months. That was in 2015. A couple months after that program, we had Andrew Carl on the program. He is a white man. But his book, The Land Was Ours. The Land Was Ours, Andrew Carl. And he talked about both of them, actually, NDB Connolly and Andrew Carl. They both talked about how white people have gotten increasingly efficient at taking Black housing, Black property, Black land over a long period of time, whether this is through property taxes, gentrification, eminent domain, variety of different ways, or what's happening right here in this situation. Hey, you're being rude. They do all of that tacky and rude behavior, and then they turn around, classic racism, where they are the victims and accuse you of being rude and hostile to them. I guess just before I get Mr. Reed, the last question I'll get in, when I spoke with Mia last week, right, and she was giving me some of the details, we together called Neely Fuller Jr., producejustice.com, people need a word guide, code book, both. So we called Mr. Fuller, and Mia was giving him some of the details of her situation. And Mr. Fuller often can be very helpful and just, you know, giving a few words or suggestions that you might try. And he really emphasized, like, keep your cool. Like, they're going to try to do things to get you upset. And so then they can say, oh, see there, you were yelling and cursing and calling names, and we're not going to have tenants who are behaving like that, so we're throwing you out today. Like, he really emphasized that. And it seemed when we were talking, you were saying, yes, I feel like this white woman that you just mentioned that was twitching and telling you to stop interrupting her, that she was trying to get you to lose your temper. Just can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah, she was definitely trying to provoke me during the whole meeting. And I also found out by the coalition employee that she was in a fist fight with another Black woman. So I think it's a recurring thing with her trying to provoke Black women into some kind of a physical altercation. And the way she was acting, it definitely felt like she could have potentially tried to hit me, because that's how aggressive she was being in the meeting. Like, I felt like she was going to hit me or my mom, either one of us. So I definitely felt like she was provoking me the whole time. And also, whenever I would bring up the lease, she would try to cut me off. And she was doing a lot of that, because a lot of the things that she was requesting for me to do was not a part of the lease. So when I would bring that up, she was being very, you know, domineering and trying to divert the conversation to something else. But definitely, I definitely felt physically like she was going to try to hit me.
That should not be minimized or lost on any of our listeners, that this suspected race soldier, this white woman, was able to get into some sort of violent confrontation with a black female, probably a tenant, someone who was renting on the property, and she still is employed there. I would be willing to bet a sizable amount of funds that if the person that she, this black female that she was in some sort of physical altercation with, if she was a renter, she is not on that property any longer. I would be willing to bet a sizable amount of money. That's just the way things work in the system of white supremacy, which just really, really highlights what Mr. Fuller said. You cannot. And he was, this is all situations on the job, whatever it is. You cannot. Really about being a counter-racist soldier, recognizing they are going to do that deliberately just to be discourteous and nasty. They might not call you some names or yell at you or interrupt you. They might try all kinds of things. They might even call you a nigger. You really got to make sure that you, hey, I have a counter-racist code about how I'm going to function, the way I'm going to behave. I'm not surprised. I didn't expect that you were going to be nice or just to me. I thought that you were going to be exactly as you are, a tacky racist, and I already got my code for how I go about dealing with that, and that does not involve me jumping up and down and yelling and cursing at you, because I know that's easy for whites to deal with. Unless you had something quick, I know we have more details to get to, but I want to nab a few of our callers as we go. Unless you had something else you wanted to add before we get to some of the callers, Mia?
Do you want me to tell you what's happening currently? Or do you want me to wait?
We can wait. We can take a few calls, and then you can kind of update us where things are now. And even since we spoke last week, we can grab that as we go in the program. We'll stop and get a few callers. The number, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6. If you would like to participate, if you have suggestions, certainly if you're in the North Carolina area or Greensboro specifically, and you have suggestions, things that work out, if you have, you know, some experience in dealing with these sort of situations around housing, that would be grand. If you just have questions, what have you, that's also permissible. No, Mr. Reed, dialed in, founder, Black Talk Radio Network, resident in North Carolina. Mr. Reed, you should be with us.
Yes, sir. Are you able to hear me okay, Gus?
Crystal clear.
All right. Thank you. And hello to you, Mia. Although I'm not the cause of those problems, I just want to say I'm sorry that you are experiencing racism and white supremacy in housing in Greensboro, North Carolina. I'm going to be quick. I do have some questions. I have been researching since I've been listening to you, but I do need more information. First question, are other residents complaining of the same issues about this person or persons that's part of the staff?
I know people who live in affordable housing, but it's not this particular apartment complex. But there's people who live in other ones that they own, and they've complained about, management and the way they're being treated, the way they feel like they're just being demanded to do things that was ridiculous. So, yeah, there are people that I know who complain, but in my particular apartment, I don't really do a lot of socializing with people. I had moved over here like a year ago, so I haven't been really socializing with a lot of people. And in this particular apartment.
So,
but I'm pretty sure.
I'm sorry. I just want to be clear. We're talking about the same management company, the same people who manage several properties. That's what I understood you to say.
Yeah, the management is different, but they under the same company.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. The reason that I ask is because for other people out there who may be listening, if you're in a similar situation, if there are other tenants who are experiencing the same problems, you might want to band together. You know, mm-hmm. like they say safety in numbers. But if you can get enough people to register the same complaints, that might be helpful. The other question, you mentioned a coalition. I looked that up. Is that the nonprofit housing organization here in North Carolina?
I think so.
Reason I'm asking is it sounds like you went to them to try to get some help. But the coalition isn't, I mean, what I'm saying is you said this is affordable housing. So I'm assuming it's through HUD.
Yeah, HUD, yes.
Okay. I posted some information on Gus's page for tonight's program in the comments section. There is one in particular you should take a look at. It comes straight from HUD. And it mm-hmm. is a PDF file. And just to share with you some of the things in there, HUD, actually affordable housing, falls under civil rights and things of that mm-hmm. nature. There is in part 6 of this PDF guide, it's called the PH Guidebook New. That's the name of the PDF file, but I linked to it in Gus's comment section. And it has mm-hmm. what's called an official grievance procedure. So it doesn't sound like you have complained to the federal government who is subsidizing the housing in the first place, and they have a grievance procedure that you might want to initiate. It also sounded like you are, and I know you might get some to these details later, but are you currently being threatened with eviction, or is it in like the official procedure or whatnot to evict you?
Yes, they already sent the a termination of my lease, but they said that I had 10 days to request another meeting with the real executive director. But somebody else intervened, one of the employees from the coalition intervened and said that he would act as a mediator between me and management so they wouldn't terminate my lease. So I signed the MOU, which was very threatening and incriminating to me. That's what it felt like, you know, because she made me sign the MOU, but in the MOU, she was making it appear as though I had threatened somebody or did something. So it seems like she's trying to set me up for the future. To cause problems, because she demanded a lot of things in the MOU that, you know, could easily be, you know, a problem, easily be a problem. So, yes.
You did?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I would have recommended that, you not have signed that, but if I was you, this is an emergency situation. I will start a grievance process with HUD, with the federal government. These nonprofits, yes, they do try to help people. They do good work. But, okay, they don't have any kind of authority over these people. All they can do is act as your advocate. I will just file a formal grievance against them. And please look at that PDF file that I shared on Gus's page, because it has a lot of useful information. And lastly, I just want to say that I've known people personally in affordable housing that experienced the same sort of problems that you have experienced. But this right here, I came across, it says that about 50% of all affordable housing units are severely distressed. And it says distressed properties may have non-functional appliances or significant damage that negatively impacts the resident's quality of life. So your quality of life is being impacted. Please look at that information that I posted for you on Gus's promo page for tonight's program. I think there's some useful information in there for you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Mr. Scotty Reed, founder of Black Talk Radio Network. I'm going to repost from the comment section so that Mia will have the information and other folks can check it out as well. Let's see. Thomas in New York, you also had a hand up. Did you have commentary or questions you wanted to share also? Thomas in New York?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good evening, Gus. Good evening, Scotty Reed. Good evening to the caller. Yeah, I believe. Yeah, I have a question. In your lease, when you signed the lease, is there more than one signature on the lease?
Yeah, it's my signature and their signature.
Oh, so you didn't think to go to court? That's a contract. If they signed it and you signed it, they're obligated to the terms of that contract. That's a contract. And that should hold up in court. Any judge, I know it's the process to evict someone in New York. It's very tedious. It takes months and months for a landlord to evict someone based off the terms of the lease. Because two people sign it, it's a contract. It's not like a loan or something. You're the only one that signed. Did you think to get a lawyer or to pro bono or just to try to go to court yourself?
I wanted to get a lawyer, but, you know, at the current moment, you know, I'm trying to, you know, have somewhere to stay. Because, you know, if they were to terminate the lease, that would cause other problems. So, you know, I would pretty much be out of somewhere to live, and that will be a bigger problem. So at this current moment, you know, I decided to sign the MOU, so I've already signed it. And I had issues with that I want to discuss, you know, later when he, you know, when he asked me about it. But so right now, no, I didn't get a lawyer because I'm not, as of now, officially terminated. So I was just trying to have somewhere to stay, you know, with me and my daughter, because we have to have somewhere to live. So, you know, challenging these people, you know, it was going to go as far as it could go. And, you know, I definitely have plans to, if I have any more problems, to get a lawyer. Because that's initially what I didn't even want to sign the MOU. I really didn't want to sign it at all. I felt like it was incriminating myself when I didn't do anything.
During this whole process, instead of as soon as you got the termination notice, I think it we'll see. I don't know because you're in North Carolina. In New York, and I'm not sure if this is clear cut around the board. But if you're having problems with your landlord, you take it up with the city, and it kind of gets rectified through them going by the terms of the lease, being that most leases two people sign, it's a contract, so they can't go against the terms of the lease by the law. So I just for some reason, I just think what these people are doing to you is illegal. And I think that you have some recourse if you were to file an action against them in court. You know, I don't even think you need a lawyer to do it. I think you can look up, Mr. Reed said, a grievance, or you can do that in the court system. I'm sure there's, I'm not the best legal person with the wording, especially coming, and I know that's the South, so it's totally different, but I think that if you were to take them to court, you would win based off of the terms of the lease.
I think so too. And definitely, because I feel like they're going to continue trying to have a problem. That's what I personally feel. And if it ever came down to it, you know, that's what I was going to have to do. But I know I have all of the you know, evidence that I need that I'm being harassed. So that's definitely going to be in the works. But right now, I was just trying to, you know, do the best, whatever I can to have somewhere to live.
absolutely. And that was pretty much all I had to say. Thank you, Gus. Just look and see if they have I know here we have housing court. It's court devoted to people trying to terminate people and kick them out of their apartments for all types of reasons. And that all has to go through a court process. I'm just not sure if it works like that in North Carolina, but if you have a housing court there, I would go there and explain your situation to anyone who I'm sure they'll tell you what to do. And I'll meet my mom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Reed just Skyped me a link where they have information if you need legal assistance. I'll just send you both of the links so you'll have them. I guess I'll just put them, I'll send them directly to you, me, and then I'll just post them on our social media page with the event for tonight's broadcast. And that way you all have all the details. And, you know, if you need to check it out, if we have other people that are in North Carolina or just think this is constructive information, hopefully you won't ever have to use it. But I think I think Mr. Fuller says it's always good to try to learn a little bit about everything. That way, if you have that problem yourself down the road, you already have some solid information to get you started. Or if you hear of other non-white people who are having this same type of problem, which is very likely because this is exactly what racists have planned, then, hey, you already have a little bit of information. Same thing. You can help out some other victims of racism, at least get started knowing some of the resources that they have. In fact, I know.
Gus.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. Just wanted to add this one thing because I Googled the housing court, and it says North Carolina's law states that it's against public policy to evict a tenant by any means other than court proceeding. So, yeah, I think what they're doing is totally illegal. And if you were to take this up to a court, they would get in trouble for doing this. I'll leave my line. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right on. I know that was one of the things, Mr. Fuller, when we were speaking to him on the conference call last week, where he was saying that that's one of the things that can make this sort of thing challenging is that they have different laws depending on which jurisdiction you are. It might even vary depending on what part of the state you are. Certainly from state to state, it varies in terms of what your rights are as if you're a homeowner or a renter or whatever the case may be. It's going to be different laws. And so Mr. Fuller was saying to try to get more information, either talking to other tenants to see if other people are having the same problem or just finding out, you know, they have centers and things set up where you can find out more details about what your rights are. Were you able to make any progress on that from where we talked last week?
No.
Which was part of the program today to see if we could also get some suggestions, which we have been able to do. But that, and even that, it's been my experience, they can make that sort of thing difficult also to be able to find out where you can get accurate information and get resources. At least that's been my experience, where a lot of people just don't have that information readily available. They don't know that information. And certainly the racist property managers, they are not going to be forthcoming in telling you, oh, yeah, go right over here. And they'll hook you up and tell you everything you need to know. But I messaged the links directly to your Facebook account, Mia, so you can check out all the links that Mr. Scotty Reed made available. What is this document specifically? I think you mentioned it. It was an MOA or whatever it was, where I guess they were saying that you felt that it was criminalizing you and making you acknowledge that you did something incorrect or intimidated them. What were the details around this?
It's an MOU. It's like a memorandum. It's like a memorandum of understanding or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, they basically were giving me ultimatums and saying that basically if I don't comply to these demands from the MOU, that I could be terminated. It's like a reasonable accommodation. It's an accommodation. So, they're basically telling me all the things that I was complaining about. I need to comply with all of the demands, and I'm agreeing to do that. And if I don't do it, if I don't comply, that they can terminate my lease whenever they want to and not give me another accommodation, which I was told was against the law for her to even say that. But, in the MOU, she was basically doing a lot of any future comments of harassing behavior or any cursing or yelling and, you know, trying to imply that something that already happened, it didn't happen. So, to me, it's like, it felt like I was incriminating myself by signing. I didn't even want to. You know, I wanted her to change the wording in it. But this is the interesting part. So I sent her, I signed it from what I read. And the coalition person was supposed to be my mediator between me and management from here on out. So he signed, there was a law that we put in that they have to follow. So we put some attachments to the MOU, and she sent me two copies of the MOU, and it didn't have the attachments that we originally gave her in it. Also, it was some wording that was changed in it as well. And then my signature from when I signed it is still attached to the document, but I don't remember reading some of the stuff that's on the document. So it looked like it was some copying and pasting going on.
Do you have an original of the documents you signed?
Yes.
Oh,
that's... And I'm getting it. The person who sent it to them, they were supposed to give me a copy of it when they sent it, but they didn't have the time. So he's bringing it to me tomorrow so I can compare it, because I know some things off about it.
Hmm.
And he said that he was going to go take it to her, you know, if there's a problem, if it's something that I didn't agree to or anything like that. He said he was going to take it back to her and, you know, it was going to be a problem.
Hmm. Wow. The treachery. That's one thing right there. I think Mr. Reed, he was talking about that, saying that, you know, if it had been him, maybe he wouldn't have signed the document. Maybe that would have been the best way to go. And I totally understand the logic of, and I mean, that is a part of racism, white supremacy, to get black people, non-white people on the whole, to get us in these vulnerable positions where, hey, you can do it or you can be out in the street. Even if they would be breaking the law in doing that, or, you know, are lying or just trying to intimidate and pressure you. That's, I mean, just racist. They are so manipulative in getting us in those type of situations where we just feel like, man, if I don't do what these white people say, it's going to be horrible. And I mean, they clearly, they have the authority, and they have demonstrated they are very capable of doing that. They do that on an everyday basis. So we end up in those kind of bonding situations and not having all of the information so that we, you know, can really give everything a good, can give quality consideration and make the best informed choice moving forward. But I totally understand. Just wanted to make sure you had a place for your child and yourself. It's winter time. Who wants to be, you know, stuck in that sort of predicament? So I think you said with the demands, they were demanding, I guess, that you not curse or threaten them anymore. I guess you do something with the carpet. Was that one of the demands?
Yes. Okay. The way she started it was that you will have to get a machine cleaning, and that will require for you to either pay for a machine, borrow a machine, or get some kind of machine. Or if we demand that you do get a professional clean, that you will comply.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm just of the opinion that sort of just arbitrary discretion, where they can just kind of make up things as they go. Again, just a standard operating procedure. It goes back to the plantation. That's the type of thing that they enjoy, that we can just come in and make up rules willy-nilly and make these black people's lives miserable as we possibly can, and then boot them, you know, if they bat an eyelash wrong, or if we just, you know, get tired of them one day, we'll boot them out and bring in a whole new family of black people and do the exact same thing. That's just what the system of racism is. And I mean, what am I to think with this person has gotten into a physical altercation with a black female renter before? What else am I to think? I mean, this does not in any way, shape, form sound like any sort of professional, just business operation that's happening here. Other folks, if you all have questions, more details about what's happened with this situation and or suggestions for, you know, things that might work moving forward, definitely feel free to dial in 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. When you all had the meeting, that was earlier, I think you said January 5 of this year, when you all had the meeting and the racist woman, she's twitching and being loud and uncouth and, you know, tells you all to get out, you all exit the room, and you said once you got outside after she had been so crude to your mother, you told your mom, I think that woman was practicing racism. And you said that the white woman, she kind of opened the door at that point. I guess she said to your mom that she was going to terminate the lease. Do you think she heard you tell your mom that you thought she was practicing racism?
I know she heard me. Mm-hmm. She definitely heard me. Because the door wasn't even completely closed when I said it. I was kind of like halfway out the door when I said it. So, and she was in the middle of talking to somebody else when I said it, when we were exiting the door. So I know definitely she heard me. She heard me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, God. Oh, was she? Because I didn't even, you know, I was just in shock. So I was just like, you know, it was shocking. It was like, I didn't know how to react in that situation, but, you know, just to say we need to get a lawyer. You know, I didn't know what, you know. And anyway, the point is, like, she's a liar. So it don't matter if she would have heard me or not. She would have made up something. She was going to get the management to lie because she said prior harassing behavior. This was prior to me even meeting her. So that, to me, indicated that management was going to lie and say that I had did something to them.
Wow.
She was going to get them to lie and say that I did something. So she's a liar. There's nothing that I could have said or didn't, could not have said that would have made her not lie on me. Because after she told us to get out, that was it. She was going to create whatever scenario she needed to at that point to try to terminate my lease because that's what she wanted to do.
Wow. Mr. Scotty Reed, founder of Black Talk Radio Network, did you have another suggestion, sir?
Yes, sir. Again, man, this is just so pitiful that this is a common occurrence. This isn't like, you know, this is an aberration. This happens all too much to black people, especially when we need assistance. They take advantage. And you were spot on, Gus, in saying that they get us in these vulnerable positions and then they pressure us to sign things that, you know, we weren't under that pressure and we were able to think clearly we may not sign. But the other suggestions that I had, just on the comment that you made about she may have heard you say, refer to her as a racist. One of the things that keeps coming to my mind is when I heard Mr. Fuller talking about when you're talking to white people or you're in a public forum. And is there a way that we can talk about racism without using the R word? Because as soon as you use the R word, you know, they just shut down. So going forward, I would take Mr. Fuller's suggestion and ask questions meant to bring out the racism instead of, you know, accusing anybody of racism. The suggestion that I forgot to make to you, but first this, please call that legal help organization that Gus sent to you. You need a lawyer now. You don't need a lawyer after you get, you know, I'm not going to speak that into existence, but you need a lawyer now to help you stay in the residence since that's what you have. You know, you don't have any other place to go. So please contact them as soon as possible. They can give you more guidance about the laws here in North Carolina. The last suggestion would be, you mentioned earlier that you had recorded the person. I have had some experience in court representing myself. I kept a journal. I was in a civil dispute, so I kept a journal of my interactions with that other person. And that journal carries a lot of weight because I dated it. I put down exactly what happened after it happened. Anytime I would have a, I don't know if you own a cell phone or anything, but I will be recording all of my interactions.
Oh, I did. I recorded. See, that was going to be the interesting part because, you know, management, I felt like management was going to try to lie on me and say that I said something I didn't say. So I recorded all the conversations that was had in my apartment when they came. So, yeah, I also wrote letters to everyone. That's how we were interacting with each other. It wasn't a direct, interaction where we were talking to each other directly. It was through letters. So I made sure our communication was only through letters.
Right. So you have a clear record. So, yes, mm-hmm. yes. I'm glad that you did that because then once you go through the procedures and she's saying, you know, all these things, well, you have a record and you are within the law to record them without their knowledge because under the laws of the state of North Carolina, we are, what do they call it? A one party state, meaning that you can record a conversation and the other person doesn't have to know about it as long as you are part of that conversation. So you are well mm-hmm. within the law to record these conversations here in North Carolina. But I'm glad that you have a record, ma'am. I think it will help you out as you address this problem. Thank you.
Appreciate mm-hmm. that.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Mr. Reed. That is phenomenal, having that right. And particularly if you can have your correspondence via email. And even now, I've seen cases that have gone to court and even text message that can stand. So, I mean, email would be better, but even text message, that can count as legal documentation. Everybody has a record. They can go through those phone records and get all those text messages. So anything that's generating exactly what you just heard from Mr. Reed, that's generating written documentation, time stamp, date stamped, it's got, you know, the pertinent names and whatever, you know, took place with that particular interaction or that particular conversation, that is tremendous. That way you have an exact record, not, well, I remember and I think he said and I said, and but you don't want to trust that. You want to be professional, counter-racist soldier. Here's the documentation. We can just print out exactly what you said on, you know, January 5th at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Boom, boom, boom. This was my reply at 10:30 a.m. That's the way you want to be able to go through your record.
I also wrote her email. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I also wrote her an email right after we had the meeting, stating, you know, what transpired in the meeting and why I didn't understand why she was talking to me the way she was and all of that. So I definitely made sure that was documented and that I sent her an email about her behavior and why I didn't understand why she was, you know, behaving like she was behaving.
Grant.
Just to have that documented.
Outstanding. I'm a big advocate of the question asking as well. I know Mr. Reed mentioned that. Mr. Fuller talks about that all the time. We mention that all the time in the context of workplace too, figuring out as many questions. The caller formerly known as 1842, Emmy, did you have a question or suggestion for Mia? Yes, ma'am. We can hear you, Emmy.
I'm sorry. I do apologize. It takes me to get to the mute button with the whole unlocking and all that shebang. But thank you for sharing your story. And I have one question and then a suggestion. My first question is, when you first moved into the apartment, did you take any pictures of any of that stuff? The dirty carpet, the mold, like anything? Or do you have any pictures? Like maybe you did. And
yes,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just saying I took pictures.
So if I'm to understand, they want you to, the same dirty spot that they're talking about is the dirty spot you informed them of when you first moved in.
Before I moved in, it was a month before. That's what is documented on the paperwork that I have. Yeah, I kept the paperwork Mm-hmm. But she still made a problem out of it and acted like it didn't even matter. That was the funny part. Like, she was not trying to do what she was supposed to do at all. She was dismissive of everything, even with the acknowledgement that the carpet was discolored. She still was like, I don't care. If we request for you to get a carpet clean, that doesn't matter. When we tell you, you need to do it. That's basically what she said. So, But I still have it documented, so it's still good. That's right.
Okay, good. I did that once for an apartment that I, any apartment I move in, I take pictures of every single thing, even if it's just like a nail in the wall, because if it's there before I get there, it's not my, like, I'm not the one to blame for it. I'm not going to pay for it. But that's the reason I wanted to ask that. And so just because, excuse me if I'm perhaps not following 100%, like, I'm on top of it. But just so I can understand, so you went to, like, the people who, because there's, like, there's an organization that you would, that you go to say that you can get affordable housing. You went, did you go to that organization? Because wouldn't they be above her? Or is this just independently
working? No. The place that I went to for affordable housing, because affordable housing is, it's an entity within itself. It's really not attached to anything. It's what it is. Like, you can live in affordable housing and not receive Section 8 or anything like that. So it's just affordable housing. It's separate. So you couldn't really go to anybody else. Like, you could talk to the executive director of affordable housing, but if they have somebody like her working for them, I don't think that would be all that successful. So, you know, that's pretty much your only... That's, I mean, unless you're going to go above affordable housing, which means you will probably have to do something with court or something like that. But if I would have went that far, I wouldn't have to live at this current moment. So.
Okay. And do you have, so do you meet with anyone? Like, what are your options? I might be slightly confused. So you can clean the carpet, get a professional cleaned, and stay, or not, and then have to leave, or no matter what, you still have to leave. Like, what are your, like, options, if you could lay them out to me clearly?
Basically, I mean, when I saw the MOU, she was saying that I have to comply to any demands that I receive from housing, from management. I mean, not housing, but from management. Anything they request for me to do, I'm at this point have to do it, or they're going to terminate my lease. So my options about the carpet was to just get it clean with a machine, and which is stupid because they wouldn't be able to tell that I got it clean from a machine anyway, because the spots is not going anywhere. That's what they're not understanding. So they're just being ridiculous. It's really no, you can't make sense out of stuff that don't make no sense. Like, they just want me to, they want to demand me to do things. They want me to comply, and that's really what it is. It has nothing to do with the carpet. They don't want to pay for their property. They want us, to, the tenants, to maintain the wear and tear on their apartments. And I did see something on the internet under the apartment complex. It was like a comment section on the internet where a person did complain about this kind of stuff. And their name was up there, and I was about to contact that person, whoever that person was, but I didn't see a name or a number or anything like that. But I definitely seen somebody complaining about it, management here.
So your options are to stay and clean the carpet, or not clean the carpet and leave?
Yeah, basically clean the carpet or you're going to be terminated. That's the option. Okay. Or they can threaten to terminate. I don't know if they're really do it, but, you know.
They can threaten you with it. So is it at all possible, like, if you clean it, for that money to be deducted from your next rent? Or, like, is there any kind of incentive or payback? Or because, you know, as far as I understand, like, if you're in affordable housing, it's not like you have a whole lot of money to be paying for people to do all this other stuff. That's the whole reason that property management companies exist anyway. That's the reason rent is so high, because other people pay to fix the stuff and we just tell them when it's wrong. So has that option been placed on the table? Like, well, if I incur the initial fee, that this will be deducted from my next rent or reimbursed to me, or I'm going to get an extended wall, or like anything like that?
Absolutely not. I want to say no and not at the same time. No, absolutely not. They are not trying to compromise with me or anything. They're saying you're going to pay for this. This is your responsibility, which is a lie because it's not in the lease.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Right. They're just lying. Mm-hmm. And they expect me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What happens if you don't have the money? What if the conversation is, I don't have the money to pay for this? Not that I'm unwilling to, but I don't have the money. Like, I just don't have it. Then what's the like?
Because my mom said that. Because let me tell you what they did. So
okay.
My mom, she initially agreed to pay for the finances to get my crap cleaned to the operations director. She stated that she would do that. But then something came up where she wasn't going to have the money. So in the meeting, she said, they basically know. She sent me a letter. The executive director sent me a letter and said, on this such and such date, a person who identified herself as your mother said that she was going to get the carpet cleaned. So, and then she told me in the letter that you need to seek agencies or whatever who can help you to get it cleaned for free. So she was being ridiculous, right? And she knows there's no such agency that's going to help me with that. But she was trying to be funny. So that's the kind of people they are. Like, they're not trying to compromise. They want me to pay for the carpet. Why? Because they don't want to pay for no new carpet in here. So they're like, you're going to be responsible for getting it clean annually or whenever we tell you to, so we can keep it looking a certain way, even though it looks raggedy. So I don't know what they think they're doing, but they, you know, they're trying to keep it up so they don't have to put any new carpet down. So they're making me responsible for it, and they're not trying to compromise or anything.
Did you have to put down a security deposit?
Yes.
Is it possible for them to take the money from the security deposit and do it so you don't have to come out of pocket?
I don't think they were going to do that. Like, I have asked them, but the way that their attitude was, I don't think that would have been an option. Because they are adamant about me paying for it. So they're not trying to, they're not going to do anything where they are responsible or they have to pay or any money is coming out of whatever I gave them. They're not going to do that. They wouldn't even give me a reasonable accommodation, because that's what a reasonable accommodation is, you know, basically telling you that I have a limited income and I'm trying to, you know, work out something out so I can.
No,
right. And they wouldn't.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Absolutely. I totally understand. Like, I totally get it. I was simply trying to find, like, the best, the way so that you don't have to come out of your next pay or whatever to pay for this carpet, but you don't also have to incur the stress of trying to find a new place to live in, like, 9 or 10 days. My final question, and then I'll tell you my suggestion, which may or may not be helpful because I'm not sure at which point, like, these whole so-called or pseudo negotiations might be. If your lease is terminated at this place, which is affordable housing, does that mean that you won't be able to get affordable housing any other place?
Well, I mean, I could try now to move to another place, so I wouldn't have to deal with this particular management. But from what I'm hearing from other people who receive affordable housing, they're dealing with the same issue on these other properties. So it doesn't just stop with them. This is just a requirement from the whole company. And I will say that even the coalition, the man from the coalition, he told me that these are the best quality apartments you can find that's affordable. Like, they are. He told me out of his own mouth, like, if you try to move somewhere else, chances are you're going to be living in even worse conditions than this with a daughter. So I'm trying to, you know, live somewhere acceptable for me and my daughter, because I don't want us living anywhere where it's going to be an even bigger problem. I don't want to live in no high crime area. I don't want to live in an area where, you know, I'm going to have to be dealing with that kind of, you know, or have worse conditions, you know, than just the carpet, you know, have, you know, the roof caving in or some steps messing up, you know, and I'm about to fall through the steps and things like that. Like, I'm not trying to live in nowhere, you know, in conditions like that. So this, he told me that this is the best I could get, you know, that's affordable for me.
Is that a white man?
No, he's black. He's been very helpful in this situation, trying to, you know, help me, because he doesn't want to see me out on the street either. He knows that they're ridiculous. So.
Okay. I feel for you. I'm not exactly sure. Part of me wants to say, if you can clean the carpet, if that's the case. I mean, I really don't know, you know, what really is out there in terms of apartments. Like, you know, sometimes, like, I don't, you know, I'm not inclined to believe most people. So if they tell me something, I just think they're lying anyway. So I'll go.
I know that he's not lying, because I've been living in Greensboro my whole entire life. So, and I also had other options. I had a book of options that I could choose for, you know, that is listed under my, you know, limited income. And he's definitely right. And I already knew that before he said that. That's why I moved where I moved, because I knew that the other places wasn't even acceptable. So he's definitely telling the truth, because I live in Greensboro. I know every area. You know, I could, you know, consider moving out of Greensboro, which would pretty much be, you know, disconvenience for me if I moved out of Greensboro, because that's not really what I'm trying to do, because everything that I, you know, worked and all of that stuff, that's all in the same area, you know. So I don't want to have to spend more gas money. But if it comes down to that, I really don't care, you know, but I'm just trying to do what's best for me in this particular time. But, you know, affordable housing is affordable housing. That's the point. Like, no matter where I go, you know, it really just doesn't. I'm going to either be paying more money that I can't really afford to live where I'm living, or, you know, it's just a balancing situation on what potential problems I'm going to have regardless.
Absolutely. My one suggestion, I like I said, I'm not sure if this would really even be helpful at this point, but in case anyone else listens and they're like in a similar situation, I remember I was in a similar situation on two occasions. And on both occasions, anytime I had to deal with that property manager or that property management company, I mean, I dressed like I was going to work. I showed up, took, because it was just bad. It was terrible. Took off of work that day, went down to that property management office. I had a binder, sticky notes. Like, it didn't even matter. Like, I came officially, like we were going to court that day, that moment. And I was like, look, this is how we are going to move forward in this situation, and never, you know, and I made sure that I treated it very much like an interview or a job, like any kind of situation like that, to make sure that these people knew that I was not playing with them and that they were not about to, you know, of course I'm powerless in the situation, I'm renting or whatever, but that I'm like official. And one thing that I've kind of learned a little bit along the way with dealing with folks like this is determining the conversation they're going to have with me by how I'm showing up. And like I said, I don't know if that'll be helpful for you, because I don't know if you're going to have any meetings for them or whatever. But I mean, like, briefcase, laptop, like I open it, highlighter pens, they're talking, I'm scribbling every single thing they're saying. And it's like, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, well, miss, you know, yeah, absolutely. What'd you say? Okay, yeah, you said you weren't going to fix that at what time is it? 9:22 a.m. Like, I was like that. I was like taking pictures. You know, I'd even walk up into the management office taking pictures, like, oh, well, that crown molding doesn't look moldy like mine. Oh, look, oh, you have the new fixtures up in here. Like, you know, I was very, like, excessive with it. And in both situations, I think because I did that, I was able to, like, give off a certain thing, and I was able to get a little bit more from the situation. I still left both situations eventually, but one ended up a little bit better than the other. So, and like, I like super serious, coffee in hand, steam coming. Like, I marched down there, just, yeah, let's do this, you know, as if it was like the most important meeting there ever was. Again, I don't know if that'll be helpful, but, and just, you know, I'm not so sure in which way you're leaning, but it seems to me that I feel like cleaning the carpet might be the constructive route to go, especially if you're in the best area and you're not necessarily ready to move. I know that, you know, money is always tight, but it seems like that might be. And if you do that, then, I mean, keep all receipts, all documentation, get them to sign it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd make the biggest to do about it. I need you to show up when this person is cleaning up the carpet. I need, as a matter of fact, I need the carpet man to tell me why
I actually videotape myself cleaning the carpet, and videotape myself, you know, cleaning the stuff so I could prove that I did it. And, you know, cause she kept telling me that all these little remedies, like, oh, you should do this, that, third, you can get it out. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and record this and see if this works. Oh, sorry, didn't work. But at least I tried, and you see that I tried. So, but these people, that when you're dealing with people like this, they don't give a, they want to harass you. I already understand that, that that's what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with people who, they think of me in a certain way because I live, you know, on, under a certain means, and they just look at me a certain way. So they're like, oh, you're pathetic. You know, we're just going to get this person. I'm pretty sure that they treat everyone in this entire complex the same exact way. It's not just me. It's all of the black people who live here. So it does not matter how you dress, how, no matter all that stuff. They're like, we understand that you, you know, you live under a certain level of income. So we're going to treat you a certain way. And we know that it's going to be hard for you to maneuver around our demands, because we said so, and we can terminate you at any time. So, yeah, that you're just going to comply, or you're just going to create a problem for yourself. But as of now, they are really not supposed to be talking to me at this point, because I set it up so they can have to go through a mediator to even speak to me. So we won't be speaking to each other anymore, because at this point, anytime they come trying to do an inspection without my mediator here, they're supposed to be here and supervise over the inspection and everything. If he's not here, they're not coming in. And that's how I'm going to deal with them from here on out. So, but, you know, I always understand, you know, the terrorism for white people. So I know that they have future plans for me, especially this assistant executive director. I know she has it out for me. So I'm not, you know, I'm always thinking that something's going to happen. I'm always suspecting that something will happen. So I'm definitely getting my case together if something does happen where it comes down to a point where I, you know, who cares about where I'm living at that point? It's like, whatever, I'm going to get a lawyer. I'm going to take it as far as I can go. And pretty much it's going to be a national story. And that's just the bottom line.
I guess she gave you a suggestion. Were you satisfied?
I'm sorry, the phone locked up on me again. I was just going to say thank you for talking with me, and keep us posted. I guess what, like a compensatory call or a workplace or something? Keep us posted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The caller, 4243, last four digits, 4243. Did you have a question or a suggestion for Mia?
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is Jay from Ohio. My suggestion that I had for Mia was that actually my mother, she had just recently been through something similar. And as far as I know that you kept referencing the document that you had to sign. And with my mother, she was actually given a document that she was supposed to sign. And something that threw the racist white supremacists off, the ones who gave her the document, was that she came with an attachment. I know that, you know, this is something that you've already signed, but just in case that they try to push anything else across the table, especially since you know, since you already have that inkling that they might, you know, do something else to you, or maybe push some more papers across the table for you to sign, as far as and threaten you with, you know, evicting you, just to come with an attachment, like, cause that's what she called it. So I would maybe even write that up, maybe have something on hand for yourself, just in case if they wanted to say, oh, well, you're being aggressive again, this is another point that you're being aggressive, and you need to sign this. I would also, because I understand that you said that you've already been documenting, that is actually something that I feel like I've found, especially when my mother told me about this, I found it to be very constructive because it kind of throws them off guard because I feel like they just assume that we are not prepared and we don't think at least one step ahead. The other thing, just referencing back to the carpet, I definitely understand where you're coming from. I actually just recently moved myself. But I would also, then I understand that you have been getting things in writing or you have been trying to correspond with them in writing, which is definitely something that's really important from my experience, not just like in personal, but also on the job as well. If cleaning the carpet will be a end all be all, which is definitely something that I understand that you probably don't know, really all of us can't really know. But I would hate for them to, you know, this will just be a way for them to tax you to really control your money. To first, it'll be the carpet and then paint the walls and then, you know, place the ceiling fan blades, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just wonder if there's any way for you, if you were to clean the carpet, if there's any way for you to finally get their approval, have them sign something, or send them some type of, maybe even an email, say, okay, well, I've done this. So they just can't keep coming back at you and basically one by one having you basically renovate their apartment for you. Having you renovate their apartment for them. Because that's what I'm afraid that they would do. And I've actually heard of different situations where it's like you do this one thing, it's not good enough, or it is good enough, but then it's something else. So that's basically all that I had to add. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. But I will say that, yes, just like I stated, when I signed MOU, she put that in there that was a requirement. So even if I get it cleaned, they can definitely come back and say, well, we want it cleaned again. She made that clear in the MOU that I signed. So she's going to, it's like I already signed it, so. That's, you know, that's that. Like, she's going to, whenever they want to demand, but like I said, I'm going to have a mediator that is going to be here. So he's going to witness the harassing. If they continue to harass me, because I consider all of that harassment, to come back and keep trying to stress me out, you know, over stupid stuff like carpet and ridiculous things, you know, ridiculous charges. Like, if they continue to do that, it will be documented. It will be known. Because the mediator that is supposed to be, here, anytime there is an interaction with me and management, he's going to see everything. So that's from this, that's what my plan is from this point, is that he's going to be here anytime I'm talking to them. If he's not contacted before, they're supposed to contact him before they do an inspection or anything at this point. So if he's not here, we won't be talking. So that's how I'm gonna. Mm-hmm.
Now I understand that. Is there any way? Because I understand that you said in the document. I know you kept saying it. And I had it at the tip of my tongue, the name of it. But is there? Because I understand that you said that basically, if they want to come back at you about fixing up some other part of the apartment that you had nothing to do with.
Well, they didn't put that in the MOU. That's not in there. They didn't say anything that I have to agree to do anything. It just specifically talked about the carpet. And then it was, she put some crap in there that's definitely not supposed to be in there, because she said something about, she tried to change the mold issue that I had into mildew. She called it mildew. On the MOU, and that's something that she added, I believe, because that wasn't, I never agreed to that, and we never talked about the mold, so she tried to change that in the MOU, but she never stated anything about coming to me about anything else but the carpet. And then she said that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
In the next meeting that you have with the mediator, is there any way for you all to sit down and to, because I definitely don't, of course, trust this lady, especially by what you're saying. But is there any way for you to possibly, all of you, you three, what have you, sit down and see what other stuff they're going to try to bring up against you, and then if you can compare that against the known issues with the apartment, so that way it can kind of narrow down, like I was saying before, like if they did want to try to come back at you and say, okay, the carpet is the carpet this week, and then something else next week, and then something else next month. Is there any way to, is that maybe like an option?
I don't know if I could get them to sign anything stating that they won't ask me to do other things, but because everything is a part of my lease. But I did read on the MOU that I signed. It said at the bottom that this was being added to my lease. So to me, that indicated that this is not really necessarily a part of my lease. It's becoming a part of my lease. So she didn't say anything. All I know is that she didn't say anything about anything else but the carpet. So if they come at me with anything else, all I have to do is say this is not part of anything that I signed or any, you know. I mean, at that point, if they do this again, it's going to become a problem, period. Like, I plan on really getting a lawyer and doing all of that if they come at me again and say anything, because I'm trying to, you know, go ahead and, you know, see how this is, this mediator is going to deal with the situation. But if I have a future incident of harassment or them requesting, giving me unwarranted requests, it's going to, that's when I'm going to, you know, get a lawyer and take it as far as it needs to go. Because now you're just being ridiculous. Now you know what we signed and what we agreed on, so why are you messing with me, you know? So at that point, it's going to be understood that I'm being harassed. I mean, it's already understood. I mean, I already have the documentation to prove it, but I'm just saying, like, if it escalates to anything other than what it's already escalated to, then, yeah, it's going to be handled. Because I don't think I can get them to sign anything. Even if I requested for them to sign something that I said, I don't think they would do it. It would just become a bigger problem.
Did that answer your question, or did you have another question or another suggestion, caller?
No, sir. Thank you.
Right on. Appreciate the feedback and suggestions from everyone and questions and what have you. As I said, the real serious issue with housing, just to emphasize that point, I do want to ask Mia, just I had one question specifically dealing with racism, and then to make sure we didn't leave out anything that's important, and certainly to get an update as things proceed, and even if you're able to use some of the resources, the legal resource that Mr. Reed provided, if they're able to help you in terms of understanding this MOA and whatever adjustments might, you know, need to be factored in there, and just to help you so that you can make more informed choices, that would be great as well if you're able to look that over and see if that will help you in your situation. But just this is Mr. Fuller, because as I said, myself and Mia, we spoke with Mr. Fuller last week, and he was talking about this situation and just saying that this seems to be a growing part of the strategy. This is just a brief segment where Mr. Fuller is talking about racial dislocation and that just being the plan under the system of racism, white supremacy. I just want to play that really quick, and then we will, if folks have any other questions or suggestions that they would like to share, we'll make time for that, and then have a couple other questions I want to get in with Mia before we close things out. But this is Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. Again, his website, producejustice.com. He's discussing the concept of racial dislocation.
Yes, that's one of the six basic strategies that the white supremacists are using now, and that is racial dislocation, confusion. The key word here is confusion, but the word dislocation also is very important because it means you are forced to move from one place to another. Dislocation is not the same as relocation. Relocation is when you voluntarily go from one place to another, whether it's one house to another, one apartment to another, or one town to another, one area to another. But you do it voluntarily. dislocation is when you are being forced to. Now, the white supremacists have to be able to make black people, non-white people, move from one place to another. They're not going to give that up. That goes with the package, the entire package of the system of white supremacy itself. In the system of white supremacy, there are some absolutes. So always be prepared to be forced to move. I mean, if you're renting a place and whatnot, you can think that you're settled in and all like that, even with a fine job and all like that. All they have to do is just come around and go up on your rent. But you say, well, that's all the more reason I don't rent. I own my own place. Oh, you think you do. And you're non-white? Well, they can come along and say, we got something called eminent domain. And we are going to run some railroads through where your house is. Why? Because it's good for the body politic as a whole. And you say, well, why my house? Well, why not your house? And that's the kind of answer they give. So where the black people are, that's where they run the new rail lines. And the black people have to move. They say, well, that happens to some white people, too. True. But white people have more alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
They have more compensation. The black people don't get this. And they are forced to move maybe several times, where the white person might not be forced to move but once. See, black people are always on the move. You look at the newsreels and all like that. It's always dark-skinned people who have their babies in their arms, straggling across the desert, or trying to get over some fence, or trying to cross somebody's border, you know, with someone chasing them with rifles, trying to corral them and send them back where they came from, whatnot. Well, where they came from was also orchestrated by the white supremacists. You're forced to move from where you are, then when you get ready to go to another place, they're saying you can't come here. Even though they control, the white supremacists control all places where non-white people are.
Mm.
You got to have that in mind. They're talking about people trying to get out of Haiti, people trying to get out of Nigeria and whatnot, and fleeing across the desert and whatnot, or people trying to get out of Honduras. Well, why are they trying to leave Honduras? They say, well, the gang warfare and people with guns and people just going around crazy, doing crazy things, burning down people's houses and shooting them in the street. And the little children, I mean, you know, not being able to play on the playground because somebody's going to kill them and all like that. Well, now, why is this happening? The white supremacists are behind it. Where do guns come from? Always the white supremacists. Nobody but them.
Mm.
Nobody but them. Mm. Always them. Never anybody else. It's always them.
Mm.
Where dark-skinned people, people of color, are concerned. So the people say, I can't stay here anymore. I can't stay in this neighborhood anymore. I'm in south side of Chicago. I can't stay here anymore. I got to get out. So that's one way of getting you out. Mm-hmm. Gunfire, that they just allow people, just bodies to stack up in the funeral homes every weekend. So you decide that you can't walk the streets, you can't get to work. You can't stand on that bus stop early in the morning, and the person at your job is threatening to fire you because you are not arriving on time. And you say, well, if I go out in the dark, I have to leave where I am in the dark, and I have to stand on the bus stop, and the bus is always late. See, it's all well figured out.
Mm-hmm.
The white supremacists already know this because they orchestrated it. And so they know you can't stay there. So you're going to be looking for another place. And when you go looking for that other place, they say, oh, sure, you can move in here. But now, where's the money?
Mm.
And you say, well, I don't have that much money. Well, then you can't move in here. It takes money. You know, the world goes around on money, buddy. You know, so keep moving. Yes. So that's something that's going to continue. That's why when people say that they don't want to talk about racism, they're really saying, I don't want to talk about anything that has to do with my being on this planet.
Right.
I want to talk about something about, you know, on another planet. You know, I don't even want to talk about anything that has to do with me being on this planet, because you better believe if you have dark skin and you're on this planet, you're under the system of white supremacy, and all of your problems come from that.
Wow.
So it means that you have to be serious about what white supremacy is and how it works and what to do about it on a daily basis.
Exactly.
And as far as dislocation is concerned, being forced to move from one place to another, stop accumulating stuff that you don't need.
Context of white supremacy, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. You can get Word Guide, Codebook, ProduceJustice.com. ProduceJustice.com. Always a hoot to hear from Mr. Fuller. The person who called in, Jay from New York, did you have a question and or suggestions for Mia, Jay in New York? Jay in New York, are you with us? Your line should be open. Not hearing you, sir. Don't know if you hit your mute button or don't have your, or ma'am, sorry. Don't know if you have your sound muted or there's an issue with your sound, but we are not hearing you. Jay in New York, not hearing you. Okay. We will see if they want to try and call back in or figure out their tech issues or what have you. One of the last few questions I wanted to get in, with given everything that happened and you know, you and the jeopardy, you and your black child have been in with all of this and just the really horrendous conduct that was even targeting your mother and talking to her in a very disrespectful and crude manner. Did that change your mom's stance? Like when you all finally got away from all this and were able to talk about what happened, did your mom agree? Like, yeah, I think these folks might be practicing racism. Maybe you were onto something.
Yes, she agreed that. I mean, my mom understands that people are racist, but she does not agree to the fact that all white people, you know, have some kind of level of racism.
Hmm.
She doesn't believe all. She just believes certain. She believed that instance was a racist white person.
Got it. Got it. That is pretty common as well. We think that it's not all of them. Some of them are cool in the gang. It's just Donald Trump and, you know, a few others. But, yeah, that's to be expected. I guess with the situation now, which you talked about where they got this new, I guess, amendment that they're going to add to the lease about the carpet, and maybe you can investigate some of the resources that Mr. Reed provided, and you have your mediator who's going to help you kind of be there to witness and help you deal with things moving forward when you have to have meetings. I guess what is your general sense about where things are headed now?
I have no idea. I hope it's for the best. I feel like she's planning on trying to cause a problem, because all of the things and the demands that was in the MOU, it indicated to me that she's definitely is going to, I don't know at what point, but she's going to enforce, because I do believe that she has, I mean, of course she has authority over management, okay? Mm-hmm. So even if they don't want to be a problem, I feel like she's going to tell them to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they was already having a little attitude in the first place. So it's not like they're innocent, anything like that. But I feel like, you know, things may die down in the next few months. But however long I'm living here, it's going to gradually escalate into another problem. Because she's setting it up now. And from what I understand about white people, you know, they'll play nice and cute temporarily, but if they're trying to imply that something happened that did not happen, which is a lie, then that means they plan on doing something in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go back to that and say, oh, see, here, I said this. Remember, I said this, and she's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally,
mm-hmm. I mean, the treachery, I think, has been pretty abundant from what you have reported. If, you know, you have suspicions that they might have done some switching things around after you had signed a legal binding document, that they might have went and tried to alter it or change it and make it look like you signed something that you actually didn't, and everything else that's been presented trying to get you to pay for things that were, you know, already broken prior to you even moving into the premises. So all of that is valid. And I think one of the previous callers, where she was saying that this could just become the pattern where they just get you to furnish, you know, all new tidings, all new carpet and everything else for the apartment.
Right.
And they don't have to pay for anything. Like, I could totally see that being the pattern with racists. The person who called in, 6900, did you have a question for Mia or suggestions?
Yes, good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, great, thanks. I was trying to get in on the other, on the vocal line, I think it was, but I wasn't being heard. Mia, definitely sorry to hear that you're going through all of this. I think the callers mentioned some great suggestions. All I could say is continue to do what you're doing, documenting, videotaping, getting other folks involved. I think is important to have witnesses, because if it does escalate to the next level, having as many people involved, I guess, is definitely a bonus. But again, like I said, there are a lot of great suggestions that have been mentioned throughout the call. So I just wish you the best in terms of getting to the next level with it. I guess I had some things about reverse mortgage programs, some of the treachery that I saw on that side of things. After we're done with Mia, if there's time later on in the program, I just had a situation I wanted to make note of in that area as well. Thank you.
Oh, for sure. We'll make time.
Thank you.
Right on. We'll make time to include that before we sign off. If other folks, if you have a question or suggestion for Mia, you should go ahead and get your hand up. Don't do a lot of dallying. Mia, is there anything like reflecting on this? And I mean, this is ongoing, so, you know, kind of see how things are resolved. But at least at this point, looking back, is there anything reflecting where you say, oh, man, I wish, you know, I had done this and instead of the way things went, or I wish, you know, I had not done this? Is there any improvements looking back on how things have gotten to this point?
I just feel like I did the best I could do, and I don't feel like it's anything else I could have done. I mean, I could have just complied. Maybe I probably wouldn't have had all of this terrorism, but I don't think so, because they were threatening to terminate my lease anyway. So they were going to create a problem. So there's pretty much nothing I could have done. I would just advise, you know, anybody that's dealing with this situation, to document every single thing that you can before you move into the apartment. I don't care how insignificant you feel something is. Just document it, complain about it, and make sure that it's noted that it was a problem before you moved in. And anything that's said, if they're telling you to do something and you don't feel like you should have to do it, if you deny or decline to do it, and or they decline to do what they're supposed to do, you ask them to do something that's part of your lease that you know they're supposed to do, that you make sure that they sign something stating that this is something they said. They said they're not going to do this or whatever. Get them to document everything that they say to you so you can have that as evidence. Because that's something that I didn't get them to document the fact that she told me to wipe that patio off. Probably should have did that, you know. Should have got her to write that down, that she said that was my responsibility.
Document, document, document. I'm a big advocate of that. That can just be so important. And again, like I said, sometimes it's just, you know, you forget things like little details and what have you, the exact details of what somebody said or the sequence of events, like, you know, just having all that information documented, then you don't have to rely on your memory for things that happened a year ago or 18 months ago, that sort of thing. And then also, I think that sends a clear message, I think, as Emmy was saying, formerly 1842, about just conveying, this is serious. This is serious business, and I got all my notes. I got my computer or my tablet or whatever it is, my device. with my notes and my catalog, my recordings, if I got those audio recordings of previous conversations, like really showing that I mean business, I'm taking this serious, and I'm going to have evidence to support everything that I'm saying, what you're saying. There's going to be, you know, a thorough record of everything that has transpired, and particularly taking that with something that's as serious as housing. If whites are going to be involved, I think that is absolutely the best way to go. And I know it can be tedious and, you know, having to keep track of all that, but I mean, hey, something as serious as housing, that is worthy of taking it serious in those type of situations. You want to try and have as much as you possibly can to protect yourself, ammunition, when you got to deal with these race soldiers, with these type of major major events, major situations. Anything
also,
else?
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Make sure that no matter what kind of a white terrorist that you're dealing with, that you always keep yourself calm and under control at all times. No matter how angry you get, no matter if they're up in your face or anything, just do not respond to that. Do not. Because that's their main. If I would have slapped the crap out of this lady, which I really wanted to do, it would have been a wrap for me. I wouldn't even had a case. Like, it would be like done. Like, you're crazy. You hit this lady. You're out of control. You know, it would have been no, I wouldn't have had no say after that. After, if I would have smacked her. So do not, you know, let these people, you know, piss you off. Because to me, the way I look at white people, it's just systematic with them. They're just, it's just their nature. It's their behavior. And just like you said, Gus, I always expect them to be terrorists. I never expect them to be my friend. I don't expect them to see my way or, you know, to sympathize with me or anything. I always expect terrorism anytime I'm in an interaction with a white person.
Pure counter-racist logic. Music to my ears. And again, just keep it in mind. I mean, you know, it just happens to be that this is North Carolina. So, I mean, you got real current illustrations of exactly what she just said. Keith Lamont Scott, Jonathan Farrell. They are experts at that sort of thing. It's, oh my gosh, nigger scared me to death. I had to shoot him 8 times, or I had to shoot him. And in fact, it was just in North Carolina where they slammed that teenage black girl on the ground in the school. Same type of thing. Oh my gosh, the niggers were out of control. We just had to do it. I mean, you know, the niggers, you got to do what you got
to
do.
I had to deal with stuff like that in school as well. You know, the physical restraints and that kind of thing. I've dealt with situations like that with resource officers. So,
wow. That is the system of white supremacy. That is what we're dealing with from, you know, childhood all the way to the grave and beyond. You can just expect terrorism from whites. And I think just being honest about that as early as possible, as soon in your existence as possible, I think that just puts you in a much better position to think of counter-racist strategies, things to do to try to help you be in the best position to neutralize these constant attacks. But definitely appreciate, because I mean, this is, I say this for workplace racism. This is one of those topics that is also, this is not fun to talk about, you know, being in a situation where whites are threatening to boot you out of your house and just all of the stress of having to deal with that. And then these abusive and violent white women coming and being involved with your situation and trying to make you spend money that you don't have and attacking your mom. I mean, this, just all of it. Is just heinous, and I really sincerely I apologize and regret that you've had to deal with all this, but appreciate you taking some of the time out of your Monday evening to speak with us, and I hope it, just for listeners, I hope some of what you've heard clarifies certain aspects of how racism, white supremacy operates, particularly with housing, since that's what we've been talking about. As she just, Mia said so beautifully, the importance of keeping our calm, keeping control of our emotions. That's important in all settings with regards to counter racism. And if you are a renter, if you're a homeowner, whatever it is, get information, be knowledgeable about what your rights are, because that sort of thing it tends to be very region specific. So try to get information so that you can know a little bit more. I think that also is what, like I say, with workplace racism, you don't want to have a problem on the job and have that be the first day that you've cracked open your policy and procedure manual to kind of see what the rules are there and if they're enforcing things correctly. Same kind of thinking with the renting or if you're a homeowner situation. If you can try to get some of that information up front so you kind of already know something, you'll be in a much better position moving forward if something happens. God forbid, and hopefully, you know, you won't have to use it. But if you had a look at that info up front, definitely put you in a better position. The caller who was going to share about the reverse mortgages, did you want to give us the information?
Yes, sure. Thanks for that, Gus. I just wanted to share just a situation that I bumped into just going back to visit with some of the family over the New Year timeframe. So my family member was telling me about a reverse mortgage program that, and I'll kind of preface this to say that my cousin is in a tragic relationship. She's married to a white male. And her parents are in their elder years, unable to really kind of do for themselves. So within that situation, she's trying to find assistance, exactly. She's trying to find assistance and trying to help them get some funds for their home and things of that nature. Now, they live in a very high net worth area in Brooklyn where the, you know, Victorian homes, the homes are really high net worth area at this point. They've lived in a home for 30 plus years. They're probably a year and a half away from paying off their mortgage. So there are a lot of people swooping in on these elderly, non-white individuals for these reverse mortgage programs. Enter her white husband's cousin, who's been referred by the husband, because now, you know, the whole family is kind of in this tragic mind state because he's the savior at this point. So cousin comes in, says he has a great program. All they have to do, and just think about this, all they have to do after paying the mortgage for 30 plus years is pay $15,000 to get into this reverse mortgage program. Now, I didn't hear about this until the end, after it was all said and done. So they pay $15,000 to get into the reverse mortgage program. They're able to get into the reverse mortgage program after coming out of pocket $15,000. Their house was worth $675,000 on the market. Now, they've only had like $15,000 left to pay it off. Anyone who would have listened to this would have said that this makes absolutely no sense in the world. Unfortunately, as we know, having any contact with them, especially in that type of scenario where they come into the living room, the cousin who no one knows sits down and kind of just spews all these numbers out, end all be all, they did it. It's all said and done. These individuals I know made a rake of money on this property. Then they kind of positioned the same thing to my sister from my parents' home. Again, my parents' home is in that same type of area, same type of net worth. I sent the individual 15 questions in reference to this program, just kind of going through step by step, just like Ms. Fuller talks about, questions and answers. After the 15 questions I sent him, he sent my sister back an email stating, oh, there's a new program that we can get into now. And let me just kind of go back a little bit. They said that my father would have to pay $18,000 cash up front in order to qualify for the program. After I sent the 15 questions, they came back a day later and said, oh, you know what? We found a new program that you would now not have to put any money down. We can get you into the program without the $18,000. Let's just start doing the paperwork. So my family thinks I'm crazy, that I'm kind of, you know, anti-everything. But after this example, they were finally able to see just how terroristic these individuals are in terms of the types of games that they play and how quickly it could happen. Because it would have been just 2, 3, 4, 5 forms signed, $18,000 gone, and that house would have been in a totally different position. So we're looking at other options, kind of sharing this story just to let individuals know that they are now, they have been, but they're really attacking the elderly at this point, and we just have to be careful. As Mr. Fuller says, they're not looking to let us transfer on properties. So this reverse mortgage game is actually one of the big ways that they're going about it. So I just wanted to share that example.
Wow. Great illustration. And I mean, just again, Mr. Fuller, he talks about asking questions. To ask 15 questions and have it go from being $18,000 to zero, and all the other implications for the property. I mean, wow, that is, and just the treachery, that sort of thing happens all the time. That is a staple aspect of these tragic arrangements. And sometimes, like I personally know people where the swindler was the person who married into the family. Like it wasn't their relative or what have you. And I'm sure they could have been in cahoots where, you know, yeah, we'll get the 18,000 and we'll split it 50-50 or whatever, you know, whatever arrangement between them, the white guy and his cousin. But I've seen it where, yeah, it's the person who married into the family where they are the ones that end up swindling the family out of, you know, thousands of dollars and, you know, just ruining all types of things, wreaking all sorts of havoc throughout the family. That is another reason why these tragic arrangements should be avoided at all costs. It is just a total road of destruction. And at least it seems like in this situation, just you being able to ask a few questions helped some victims of racism begin to maybe rethink the quote unquote white saviors in their life.
Absolutely.
Grand, grand. Really appreciate the details, sir. Outstanding. I think more and more folks, I think all of us, the better, you know, understanding we get of racism, white supremacy, well, all of us, you'll have more and more incidents like that where you're able to put your counter-racism to work to help out some of your loved ones. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. You can help them, you know, keep their house safe, keep $18,000 in their pocket, and help them point out, yes, that is a race soldier right there who almost got you. And housing security right on time with the subject that we were talking about. As I stated earlier in the broadcast, NDB Connolly, guest on the program, one of the best books that I read, 2015, A World More Concrete. It is amazing. If you live in Florida, it should be mandatory reading. And we had Andrew Carl, The Land Was Ours, same year, even Family Property with Beryl Satter. All three of those books are very informative, and all three of them deal with the exact subject we talked about today in terms of the terrorist attack on white housing. They call it housing insecurity now to try to be cute. But all three of those programs from the spring of 2015, they are phenomenal. And all three different authors, NDB Connolly, Andrew Carl, Beryl Satter, all three of them agreed whites have gotten increasingly efficient taking black property, variety of means. We don't even have all time on a full 3-hour program to get to all of the ways that they excel at that sort of thing. Definitely something, as I stated before, we should all try to learn a little bit more about. Thanks to Mr. Scotty Reed for the suggestions, Thomas in New York, Emmy, our financial expert who just called in to share details, everybody who dialed in, and certainly from Mia for taking time out of her schedule to talk about this difficult situation. Hopefully we can get an update as she continues to battle this, hopefully successfully able to neutralize these tacky racist white wenches down in Greensboro, North Carolina. We'll be here on Wednesday. Pam, one of our favorites, will be back on the program. We will talk about the pending Trump presidency, the end of the Obama era, her thoughts on the closing of 2016 and what she's looking forward to for the new year. That'll be normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, this Wednesday, 2 days from today. Thursday, workplace racism. Every Thursday, same time, workplace racism, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And Friday, we will not do the book club. We will be here for the inauguration of President-elect Donald J. Trump. I am excited. I will encourage again, if listeners, if you have favorite moments from the past 8 years of President Obama, speeches, moments where whites were being tacky and racist, that would be especially good. If you have any favorites, any moments where whites got caught exchanging racist emails or saying something tacky and racist about President Obama or First Lady Michelle Obama or Sasha and Malia, please, 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 I do not think, you know, this week should get by without all the legions of incidents of tacky racist behavior that has been on display for the last almost decade. So any of those, feel free to share any inspiring moments where, you know, you felt great or you appreciated having the Obamas in the White House for a time. Share. We will review and do it up this Friday. We'll probably be on for hours. I am going to be elated. Friday cannot come fast enough. With that, invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you're not into PayPal, drop us an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. Thanks again for everyone for participating. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Monday evening, the Dr. King holiday, no less. As I state always, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I'm pretty sure Dr. King would co-sign with me on that one. We have massive problems, as this program should demonstrate, massive problems that we have to confront as black people, victims of white supremacy. I don't think being under the influence of alcohol, cannabis, tobacco, any other narcotics, I do not think that is going to help us in our efforts to permanently neutralize racist man, racist woman, racist child, and I don't think there's any evidence to support such an idea. Sobriety would be best. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.